began to talk about
Rogers and color.
Rogers and color. Well, we began to make various combinations of dyes and developers and built up a large chemical group, maybe 40 or 50 people during this period. By that time, this is the period 47 to 53.
We began to have success in producing single images in color, one color images. And I'll skip ahead to 1954 as the date when we were able to produce all three single color images using these dye developers. And we knew these were stable dyes. We knew we were on the road to color. And I knew that we had essentially solved the color problem. So I did what I had never done before in my life. At that point, I went out and borrowed $25,000 and invested in Polaroid stock. It would be 8 years before the color was reality in the market, but I felt we could do it at that time. Many other things were going on during this period, 47 to 54. And I'd like to tell you about a few of them now. And those involve, one, my interest in my rekindled interest in the academic world. Two, my brother-in-law, Joan's brother, interest in Polaroid. And three, Bob Woodward and my developing association. Okay?
Sure.
They're all interrelated,
sure.
But they're all pertinent to this kind of oral history. Well, let's start out with my interest. One of the people who was at Harvard when I was a student was a man named Maurice Peckett. He worked for Louis Fieser, getting his degree, his PhD. But then he decided he wanted to go to medical school. He went to Harvard Medical School after getting his PhD. And remained interested. It may be just somebody drilling a small hole, but it may be. Where are we now? I was starting to talk about my Peckett, P-E-C-H-E-T. Well, Maurice sort of kept, we were never very close, but he heard about my work in spectroscopy in the color translating microscope. And he had as a pathology professor here at the medical school a man named Sidney Farber. Told Sidney Farber about it. And Sidney invited me to come over to Children's Hospital where he was based and set up a spectroscopy laboratory. And he said he'd buy the equipment. He thought it could be useful for diagnosing children's diseases. Yes.
stop for 20 minutes. Can they write above us? What are they doing? Where are we? So you're saying about Sending Barber inviting me to Children's. Well, he invited me to set up a laboratory at Children's, and actually it was in the Carnegie Building. And that was really just out of the blue due to respect. And then when I was over there starting to do some spectroscopy of tissues, Bob Woodward and I were still talking. And I...
Eleanor will see if I can take a break for 10 to 15 minutes.
Tell her to do it, please. Okay. Spectroscopy of tissue. And I, Bob Woodward and I started talking, and he was thinking of how one could synthesize proteins. He didn't know anything about them. I didn't know anything about them. But he came across this idea of using N-carboxyanhydrides. And it turns out that these were materials discovered by a man named Boix many years prior to that time. And you could indeed polymerize them, Bob saw the possibility of polymerizing them to form peptides. And he was envisioning you could make proteins that way. I became intrigued with the idea. Having been at Children's, I began to meet other physicians in the area. And one of them was a man named Jack Fine, who's a professor of surgery and knew the problems of surgeons trying to treat patients in shock, and said, when I told him I was thinking of getting into this polypeptide business, he said, would they be useful, possibly be useful, as a blood plasma substitute? Not knowing anything about it, I said, well, there's always that possibility. And so he suggested I apply to the Army, where a big blood plasma program, to get a research grant to do this. I did. I got a research grant, and that allowed me to begin to make synthetic polypeptides at Children's. Remember, I was still at Polaroid at that time, running this rather large chemical research group. So I started to spend my late afternoons and evenings over here working with a research group making polypeptides.
How big was this group here?
Well, it started out with two people, and it ended up at about eight, supported by the Surgeon General of the Army initially. And then Sidney Farber had great plans. He was getting into the cancer diagnosis and treatment business. He was one of the first physicians to use methotrexate treatment of children's cancer. He got a lot of publicity. And he began to collect funds to build a new cancer-oriented building, the Jimmy Fund building. And I was to be a keystone of that building, according to Sydney, to have a half a floor of laboratories. Well, it was four floors. And to be a professor at Harvard Medical School. This was all in the early 50s, while I was busy working at Polaroid, heading the chemical research, and trying to make color a reality. So I was a busy young man during that period, having both a laboratory at Children's as part of Harvard Medical School and this large research responsibility at Polaroid. And that was one aspect of what I wanted to tell you about, to bring us, to get us close to the Harvard situation. Second aspect that I think is pertinent is that my brother-in-law, Jack Dreyfuss, became intrigued with, he was a Lehigh graduate, very bright man, one of the two or three people who I'd say was close to a genius that I've known, Bob Woodward being the other. Jack became intrigued with Polaroid after I joined the company and the photography began to become real. Intrigued with the instant photography, thought they were poor business people, but he became intrigued with Polaroid from a financial sense. And so he and I used to talk about this all the time, and he invested in Polaroid stock. And of course, I started to invest when I was reasonably sure that color was going to come out. And then I also did another thing which had a great influence on my life and the lives of many other people. I wrote memoranda to the board of directors, certain members of the board of directors, suggesting that Polaroid ought to have a stock option plan. First it was turned down, and then it was embraced. And as a result, the stock option plan was developed and implemented for key employees. And as a result, I got a stock option in 1957 or 58. Bill McCune was the engineer who became the president, got one, Charles McCulka. And I convinced, I don't know how I did it, but I have it all there. I convinced them to give an option to Bob Woodward. We made him an employee. And so initially they weren't worth anything, but because the company was having troubles with the black and white film, the company was not making much money, but the potential of color was there. And that got me interested in finances and the potential of making a good deal of money. So, anyhow, the stock, to make a long story short, we each got all the people who were officers, vice presidents. By that time it was 1958. I was made a vice president. Charlie McCook was made a vice president. Bill McKinney had been a vice president. We all got these stock options, which, when the stock was quite low, the stock subsequently not doubled or tripled, but went over 100 times the value. Mm-hmm. It's one of those rare situations. Well over 100 times the value of the option. So all of us became, at least in theory, quite well off. And by the time I was 40 years of age, which was 1959, I had become, at least in paper, a millionaire. So that's another thread,
yes,
that runs through my life. So Children's Hospital, Harvard Medical School, development of the color, and then the financial aspects of Polaroid. So as I said, by 1958, somehow or other, Land recognized that I was okay, made me a vice president and a member of the executive committee. So I was really in the corporate world.
Yes.
But at the same time,
you were here.
I was spending half my time at Children's. In fact, I arranged to take a year, quote, sabbatical, to leave Fulbright, to spend it over here. And the executive vice president at that time, David Skinner, convinced me not to take a year, only half a year. They pay my whole salary, which was small. And so I only took a half year. And during that time, Sidney Barber was supposed to secure my professorship at Harvard, which of course never happened, because he didn't have a lot of influence. He meant well, but didn't have. He was not highly regarded in the faculty, which I had no way of knowing. So that brings us to sort of 1958. And brings me to the period where I was being productive scientifically in the polypeptide field. They began to be recognized not as protein substitutes, but for models of protein conformations. And I was published in like mad, had NIH support for my work at Children's, and was being recognized, beginning to be recognized scientifically for my work. At the same time, so I began to think, what am I doing at Polaroid? Do I want to spend the rest of my life at Polaroid? And by 1960, I had more or less decided that I didn't want to be one of the people who would be in a competition to succeed Land as president of Polaroid. But rather, I'd really like to try my hand at a new career. So I let it be known discreetly among a few friends, Bob Woodward, Gilbert Stork at Columbia, Alex Rich at MIT, and I was thinking of leaving the industrial world. And I got three offers. One at Columbia, one at MIT, and one at Harvard Medical School. I told Lane I was thinking of this. And then I told him I had gotten the offer from Harvard Medical School to be a professor of biological chemistry because of my peptide work. And he said at that time, I knew I couldn't keep you at Polaroid. So this may be a good chance, time to stop. Oh, what do you think?
Sure, that sounds good. I had some other questions.
Do you want to ask me a few questions? Because I had some other things to do, to add on this part. But
Well,
it brings us to this point.
Okay.
But I think if you want to ask them now, fine.
Well, if you wanted to add those things, I could postpone my questions till next time.
Okay.
And,
Well, I think one of the things I should add on a personal nature is that I had some very good colleagues when I was at Children's in the Jimmy Fund building. Carolyn Cohen, who's a very distinguished biophysicist and is now a professor at Brandeis. Arthur Solomon, who was in the medical school and who also, I guess, recognized that I had something, asked me to lecture in the biophysics program. And I spent time actually teaching in biophysics. And he wanted me to be a professor. He had arranged for me to be a professor of biophysics. But being a chemist at heart, I felt, while I love the biophysical aspects of the work, I'd be better off being in biological chemistry. And they really welcomed me. I still remember the letter Gene Kennedy, who was chairman of biological chemistry, wrote to me at that time. And I met with George Packer Berry, the dean at the medical school. They offered me an excellent salary. And being at Harvard. So that's what I chose. And then we can talk about how I made the transition. Living with Sidney Farber wasn't easy. He was a very bright but highly emotional man. And he took it very hard that I would not stay at Children's and leave Polaroid during the 50s, even though he could not get what he said he could get for me, namely a professorship. And I remember, look, I was going to tell him how upset I was with him, and Lupo Dussmann calmed me down. And I never really told him, but I would want to tell him how upset I was. I'd like to go back when we get together again and tell you about the Polaroid-Kodak relationship.
Oh.
Okay?
Yes.
I think that'll be an interesting part that I've glossed over.
Yes, absolutely.
So maybe we could start with that and then go on.
I have some questions based on Polaroid as well before we get over to the Harvard period. So why don't we stop at this point?
That's about 2 hours.
I know you've got it.
Well, I'm thinking.